Good evening and welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you from Washington. I'm Douglas Impuga, and this evening we'll talk about elections in Africa. And with us tonight is my colleague, Vincent Macquarie, Managing Editor of VOA's Africa 54. Welcome to the show once again, Vincent.
Thank you, and it's a pleasure.
You're very much welcome. And joining us from Durban, South Africa, is regular panelist, Suleiman Mgula. He's a political, independent political analyst. Good evening, Suleiman.
Good evening, Douglas, and our listeners. Thank you very much for inviting me.
You're very much welcome. Once again, we're looking at elections in Africa. Guinea's President Alpha Conte won a controversial third term amid protests across the country. The 82-year-old beat his opponent, Kalu Dellen Diallo, and who said he would contest the results. The president in neighboring Ivory Coast also made his first two terms disappear with a constitutional amendment too. So he also snatched a third term. And after 34 years in power, Uganda's 76-year-old president plans to run for re-election in February. The age limit for president in Uganda was 75. But then he changed the constitution and sought to prove his fitness to stay in power with a demonstration of his red carpet workout routine in the state house. That was to the amusement of many Ugandans. Now, gentlemen, so far, despite what the world has gone through with the COVID-19 and elections elsewhere, like in the United States, Africa strongmen are still on the move, Vincent.
You know, it's remarkable what has just happened in the last few weeks, that we have had some real serious elections in East Africa and then West Africa. One of the things that has been clearly outstanding is how the ruling parties really bully their way into staying in power in disregard of every democratic tradition. Now, I still have to take a little bit exception with the elections in Tanzania, where the ruling party that has been there since independence of Tanzania once again won with Magufuli. Now, definitely, the opposition is criticizing the election. They say that there was a lot of fraud and rigging and of course, harassment. But I think, as opposed to the elections in Guinea and the ones in Ivory Coast, one thing about Magufuli is that he was running for his constitutionally mandated second term. So there was no legal or constitutional crisis there. His victory also could be seen as authentic in that when you look around, Magufuli has come really strong in fighting against corruption. His methods have been rather unorthodox, of course. He has developed this culture where he often publicly shames officers who do not perform their duties satisfactorily. But this has endeared him to the many Tanzanians and even many people across the continent of Africa. He has also been credited with pushing really hard to have infrastructural projects completed and in good time. And he challenges even the contractors on the spot. He has created the culture of taking the presidency to the people. He travels around the country. You see this online and on TV. He holds regular roadside meetings with the people. And unlike many other presidents, he allows the citizens to speak directly to him about their concerns and even the performance of their local leaders without any fear. So he cuts off on the middlemanship of kind of politicians. But there's no question that over time, he has suppressed freedom of expression, including clamping down on the media, on the opposition. Yeah. And to some degree, you could sympathize with the opposition when it says that people are frustrated in the election. So that does not excuse his popularity, does not excuse some of the actions that he has exhibited towards the opposition and the media. So that's what I wanted to say. But in the case of Guinea and Ivory Coast, I think those ones leave a bad taste in the mouth. You just need to look at the violation of the constitution in Ivory Coast. A person, powering through a third term, which is not constitutional, undermines democracy and the future of the country's stability, in as much as he may claim he has won. And the same thing, I think, happened with Guinea. I'll let my brother, add on to that, but that's my initial observation.
Yes, it's interesting. Suleiman recently mentions the example of Tanzania, despite the faults, but at least Magufuli is winning re-election seems to have been a bit fair. Africa is a mixed bag because we also saw an Anglican priest who won the Seychelles presidential election, and also marking the first opposition victory since the Indian Ocean nation is independence from Britain more than 40 years. Go ahead with your argument.
Actually, while there are some few cases of good instances like that one in Seychelles, by and large, I think the way Vincent has said, we have got a problem on the continent. 21st century, at this time, to have leaders of the caliber which we have on the continent, given the elections which we have just had, as Vincent has elaborated, these are old men. These are well-educated men. The one in Guinea, a former lecturer. The one in Ivory Coast, a former IMF executive. They are well exposed. But the level of disingenuousness, the level of shamelessness, the level of selfishness, the level of greed which they are showing is so appalling. Because by and large, there was no way. Why did they have to subvert the constitutional process? Why did they have to interfere? Why did they have to make the illegalities legal? To go to all their way to the constitutional court to things which are really illegal, to make them legal, which is impossible in the eyes of the people. Why should such well-educated and mature people think that the population is so blunt? The population is so stupid, it can't see between the lines. Because really, Ivory Coast, given its history, it is going to slide back into violence. Whether we like it or not, yes, he has got a very good percentage of lead. Yes, you can get the big percentage in the election, but you should know that soon or later things will go out of hand. The gentleman in Mali had just won an election. People in Egypt, they had just won an election. Omar Bashir had just won an election. So why shouldn't people know that winning an election itself is not enough to make one guide a country or lead a country peacefully? In short, what I'm trying to say, in addition to what Vincent has said, Douglas, is that the elections in Guinea, the elections in Ivory Coast, they are unfortunate, they are absurd, and let's cross our fingers, but nothing good is expected. They have just prepared their countries for another bout of violence and the endless struggle, especially for the poor people, for ordinary people on the street. As far as Tanzania is concerned, actually, Vincent has elaborated that, yes, it is agreeable that Magufuli has done a lot, but unfortunately, the process illegitimizes him. Because if he has done a lot, if he has got support, if he's sure of the win because of the good thing which he has done, why does he go out of his way to lock the internet, to stifle the media, to put a lot of impediments in the way towards election? Even post-election, what he did is the acts which he was involved in, leadership of Chadema were arrested in Dodoma, in Dar es Salaam, in Zanzibar. I mean, the whole leadership was arrested. How can you say Tundu Lissu charge Tundu Lissu with causing terrorism? Which terrorism? How can you open up charges on people, innocent people, and you formulate all types of charges against them? If you knew you won the election, why don't you let them free? Why don't you leave them to demonstrate? After demonstration, why don't you allow them to go to the courts and then the courts will decide? Do they have to sleep in police cells? So the type of elections which we have gone in, Douglas, there is a lot to be desired. So far, so good.
I see. Vincent, following up on Suleiman's point there, actually, it's not a matter of winning elections, according to some analysts. It's people, these people in power, try by hook or crook to maintain in power. So whether the elections are fair or not, whether they lock up opposition politicians, to them that doesn't matter. What matters to them is to figure out a way of maintaining power.
I think great leaders are those who think about the future of their country. They think about the present and the future. Great leaders are those who are not selfish and self-centered. A great leader does not think he's the only person in a country that can lead their country to prosperity and development. A great leader is one who recognizes that he's just another human being, a fellow citizen along with millions of others. So when an 82-year-old man pushes through a constitution in Guinea so that he can have a third term, first he's showing disrespect to the citizens by not recognizing all the energetic, highly educated members of that country who could take over the leadership mantle so that they can inject new and fresh ideas into the country. So when you win this election amid protests and, you know, there's so much dissatisfaction among the citizens, it's not a great way to build a country that has a stable and prosperous future. So those kind of leaders exhibit the fact that they are concerned about themselves staying in power and benefiting in any way they can within that time. The same thing, I mean, look at Ivory Coast. Alassane Ouattara came in because he criticized the former president for mismanaging the country. And in fact, there was a lot of bloodshed that was accompanied his coming to power. He came to power, people thought this is a very Western-minded type of Democrat. He means well for his country. Now, regardless of what his party told him, when the former prime minister died, suddenly the guy who was supposed to become the presidential candidate, if he meant well for his country, for a person of his age, for a person of his education, if he's a true lover of peace and prosperity, he would have declined. He would have told his citizens, his fellow citizens, there are many other men in this country. Let's take a step back and support somebody else. I have done my part. I have made my contribution. I'll sit on the sideline and see how I can advise the country as we move forward. So I don't enjoy talking about the negatives that characterize African elections because I really wish things could be smooth and clean. And of course, the elections can have some little tensions here and there. But as my brother Mula mentions there, even in the case of Tanzania, why engage in that kind of unnecessary frustration and harassment of the opposition when you're popular? Why not allow the democratic processes to take place smoothly, beat the opponent clean and continue ruling the country along, of course, with those people who you defeated as the official opposition in parliament. It's this attitude where some men think, you know, the country belongs to them. They rule the way they wish. And that's the danger I think Magufuli has gotten into, where he feels like a benevolent dictator. He means well for the country, but then he damages his own image by injecting dictatorial tendencies instead of allowing his popularity, in fact, to kind of be sufficient. He's doing a great job. Let it be sufficient. Do not engage in negative activities that will soil your image. And in fact, the legacy might end up being damaged by the end of the next 5 years.
I see. Let me remind those of you who are just joining us. You're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to from the Voice of America here in Washington. Tonight, we are discussing elections in Africa. And our panelists are Vincent Makori and Suleiman Mugula. And I'm your host, Douglas Impuga. Now, Suleiman, African elections at times can be look like a mockery, can look like a circus, but this when it goes to really extremes. In Uganda, for instance, the guy who has been in power for 34 years got nominated this week, and the whole they are having no campaigns. The opposition are supposed to have no campaigns. He calls it scientific campaigning, and the violence is still there. So, as Vincent was saying, why, if you think you are popular, why harass the opposition? Why arrest them? Why beat them up?
Vincent, Douglas, the way Vincent has said, one wouldn't enjoy to chastise the African leaders. But given the way they have behaved, given the absurd situation which they have created, we cannot run away from criticizing them and saying that really what they are doing is a shame. Because, as you have said, number one, elections are a very expensive venture. They put the nation into a huge expense. They excite the people. The people are so hopeful, yet what they have prepared is sham. By the very fact that a person like Ouattara can go out of his way to abuse the judicial system, the constitutional system, to abuse the constitution, the fact that Conte Niguini can go out of his way, it already shows that he's going to rig the elections. Therefore, even before the elections start, the country already knows who is the winner. So, as you have said, why engage the country into a sham election, when you know actually that you are going to allow the opposition to participate, you're not going to allow the opposition to be declared winners? So the same also comes to Uganda, where you are saying the president has been going on for 35 years. It is very, very, very clear that the nation is fed up of him, because if he was really a popular leader, as we have said in the case of Tanzania, if you're a popular leader for someone who has stayed for 35 years, it means you are almost a king. You don't even need to campaign. You just need a few guys to campaign for you, to remind the people the good things which you have done. So the very fact that he can go out of his way, number one, to go to parliament to force a constitutional amendment, push the amendment to parliament, injure, beat up members of parliament, in other words, force the amendment into the throats of the members of parliament, that one, on the first day, it was very clear that he's going to rig the elections. Even before he goes into all the program, all the nominations, as you have said, it was very clear. The moment he beat up members of parliament, the moment he forced himself to be on the ballot paper, whereas he was not supposed to be in the election, the moment he forced that one, it means he's ready to kill for the sake of winning. And that is what has happened so far, so good. So we don't expect anything, but the way you have put it, Douglas, what is so concerning is, why should he engage? Why should he put the country into a sham election when he knows that actually he's determined to lead by hook or crook? He should as well have found a way to declare himself a president instead of harassing, brutalizing people, arresting people, killing people, because like now in Ivory Coast, already over 16 people have died and the violence is going to continue and so many people are going to die. Why die when we know that the leader is ready to stay there forever and ever?
I say, Vincent, do you think that the pandemic plus where the other powerful countries, the former colonial masters, don't have time for Africa, is making matters worse because now these leaders can do as they wish?
Mm-hmm. So the thing is, I think the pandemic might be a contributing factor, but it's been a few years now since I think the Western nations actually started being a little bit disinterested in the serious inner workings of the African countries' democracies. Partially, because I think a number of African countries have started, you know, making progress. You have to commend countries like Ghana, even Nigeria, where we are having regular elections, and we've seen, you know, transition from one president to another in a peaceful manner. You know, a few other countries, whether you talk about Botswana, Namibia, you know, we hope to see such kind of transition, peaceful transitions in countries like Kenya. But at the same time, I think this notion that Africans have to look to the West to feel that their countries can function. I saw the opposition in Tanzania saying, please, we are calling on the international community not to recognize the election. Time has to come when African countries become responsible for themselves, for their own democracy, and for their progress. And therefore, those who are in power should now start thinking about how to create that culture. It is the responsibility of Alpha Conde, for example, to have said, no, I'm an 82-year-old man. Here's what is going to be my legacy, to create an environment where after me there's going to be regular, peaceful elections and there will be two terms. He shouldn't go into the presidency on the blood of whether it is 12 or 20 people so that he can run for the third time. Whether he is popular. You could be as popular as you want. I mean, we have countries in the world where some leaders are extremely popular, but the constitution is clear. Why? It has been proved that at least a two-term limit helps a country to get new ideas after every either 4 years or every 10 years. So my take is the West has its own problems, has its own issues, and you cannot just rely on the West to come and dictate to you how to run your countries. It is up to the leaders, the people who are in positions of power, to think of how they will be remembered. Will you be remembered as the person who created stability and institutions of democracy that have helped your country to grow and prosper and become stable? Or will you be remembered as a person who was willing to kill and to have people killed? So that you can have an extra third term, even at age 82, or an extra third time, even at age 78, of what value is that to the citizens of the country, and of what value will that be to the legacy of that particular leader?
I see. Suleiman, recent there seems to suggest maybe we should call to the better angels of these African leaders. Do they have it within them to look inside them and say, well, I must do the right thing, I must care about my legacy, I must care about the nation? Some of them seem not to care. Some of them have died in office even.
Whether they have it or don't have it, we just have to continue pleading to them, because the writing is very clear on the wall. What comes out, the future of the country can be predicted on the first day after election. I mean, they should see it. After the election, I mean, in Malawi, they had a free and fair election. The next day, the president was talking of his 100 days. He was making reforms. He was making policies. He was rolling out policies. In Ivory Coast, first day, violence is going to continue. Guinea, first day, violence is going to continue. Tanzania, first day arrests are going to continue. Uganda, before even the elections are carried out, violence is already on the streets. So it is very clear what trajectory the country will take. The one where you have had a leader forcing himself on leadership, you should know that there is going to be instability, there is going to be economic disruptions, there is going to be stagnation, there is going to be, I mean, there is all sorts of chaos that is going to come in. As Vincent has said, it is high time the leadership on the continent realize that the future of our continent is not about people in Europe. It's about ourselves. It is about the leadership which is there. They have to look into their souls and say, we need to give our children and our grandchildren a better future. And the
only better future we can give them is to have a transition, to have a culture of good leadership, the way it is in Ghana, the way it is in South Africa, the way it is in Senegal, the way it is going to be in Kenya. Otherwise, you either do it or you're going to keep the country into perpetual chaos, which does not pay at all, because the problems which we already have in each individual countries are already huge. They need consensus. They need unity within the country. They need stability within the country. They need understanding of every soul within that particular country to be able to solve the problems which you have. You cannot be the God who will provide problems when the other country is moving in another direction.
Briefly, Vincent, we have seen a mishmash of partly fair elections, some of them circus that are not even elections. How do you see the future in the medium term? Things improving, or these old men who want to stick in power change constitutions are going to have their way?
I think we might still get a lot of disappointment, because who thought that in the year 2020 anybody will be trying to again push through a third term? You know, those are things of the past. Those were supposed to be things of 10 years ago, 20 years ago. The new way forward has been, term limits, two term limits. And we've seen good examples in Ghana, in Senegal, in Nigeria, in Botswana, in South Africa, that in Kenya. Anybody who was, looking forward to any elections in this time, in 2020, expected that every country now should be having peaceful and peaceful elections with the acceptable two-term limits. So we might still see this, just the same way we did not imagine this happening. But we have a few people who may want to stay in power longer, because especially those countries where we've seen these changes, these violent changes happening, they may continue on the same trajectory. But for those ones that have moved away from that, we are seeing progress. We are seeing progress. And there's a lot of progress in Africa. The only thing that makes us look at such examples, such development, is because the world easily focuses on these really terrible cases of undermining of democracy.
I see.
Otherwise, it's not a hopeless case across the continent. It's not a hopeless situation.
Well, we shall keep monitoring that, but unfortunately we're out of time. That wraps up this edition of Reporters Roundtable. Thank you to my colleague Vincent Macori, Managing Editor of US Africa 54, and Suleiman Mgula, an independent political analyst based in Durban, South Africa. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show.
It's been a pleasure.
You're very much welcome. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that you can still listen to this program in case you missed it. Just go to the internet and go to our website. It will be there for you to listen. Once again, thanks very much for tuning in. I'm Douglas Impuga in Washington, wishing you all the best.
Hello, this is Rick Pantaleo. Coming up on the Science Edition of Press Conference USA, I talk with Don Weber with the U.S. Department of Agriculture to examine the growing ecological issue of invasive species. We'll discuss the impact these invading pests have on the global economy and precious ecosystems. Listen Saturday and Sunday for Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.
Next on Encounter, host Carol Castiel talks with two U.S. political experts on the outcome of the 2020 U.S. presidential and congressional elections and what it means for U.S. domestic and foreign policy. That's Encounter, Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Peter Clote, the host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's weekend Africa show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in and you will be glad you did.